We made this.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Bell. I used to write for The X-Files, and you're listening to The X-Cast.
Bartley. Cortland.
Sarah.
Good to be back. Season 7.
Yeah, season 7.
All
We're
right.
in it now.
We're so in it. In it to win it. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about the Goldberg variation today. But, Cortland, like, what are your overall thoughts about season 7? How do you like it?
Well, this is, like, deep personal confession time now. Because for a long time, when I was watching The X-Files without any connection to fandom or Twitter fandom or anything like that, season 7 was my favorite. And I know that that's maybe going to make some eyes roll a little bit. I actually really like season 7. I think that there's a lot more going on than, like, story-wise than we necessarily think there is, just because I think it's missing some of the mythology stuff from earlier seasons. But I actually really like almost all of season 7.
It's good, right?
It is.
I think it's, yeah, yeah. I think I like, overall, it's got a different tone from 6, but I don't think that's a bad thing.
It is. Over time, and I know I have answered this question before, but over time, season 6 did definitely outpace it in terms of my favorite season. But I still really enjoy season 7 as a whole.
As far as rewatchable episodes, it's got quite a few.
I think so, yeah.
That I enjoy rewatching. Yeah, so that's cool. But today we're here to talk about the Goldberg variation.
Yay. We are.
Excited about this one. I can't wait. I love this episode. It's so good. This episode originally aired December 12th, 1999. So right on the verge of Y2K.
Wow.
Remember that?
I do remember.
The world was going to end. Did you collect canned goods?
I did not collect canned goods.
I didn't either.
I was in junior high, so no, I did not collect canned goods. I did have a Y2K New Year's Eve party.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
My stepdad at the time thought it would be really fun to throw the breaker at midnight.
How did that turn out?
It turned out awesome.
That's hilarious.
It was a great party. I'm not going to lie. I still think about that party sometimes.
Good times. That's fun. Yeah. So this episode is the 6th episode of season 7, and it was written by Jeffrey Bell, who also wrote some other episodes, Ranking, Alpha, Signs and Wonders, and Salvage. And it was directed by Thomas J. Wright, who also directed some episodes of Millennium, and he also directed Amazing Malini and 10 episodes of Castle. So we're going to talk about his directing style, because you know I love Castle. It's like my second favorite show after The X-Files. But in this episode, Mulder and Scully go to investigate Henry Weems, the luckiest man on Earth. So, Cortland, let's just get right down to the hard facts. What out of 10 would you score this episode?
Ooh, out of 10, I forgot you were going to ask me this question. out of 10, I think I would give this episode like a 7. I think it is extremely fun to watch. I don't dislike any part of it in particular. Is it the most amazing X-Files episode? No, but I think it's great. I like the intricacy of it. I think it's fun and clearly had a lot of effort went into making some of these scenes. So I think I would give it a pretty solid 7.
Nice. Okay. I think that probably encapsulates my rewatchable. I think it's very high rewatchably. Is that a word? Rewatchably?
I don't know.
We're going to make it a word.
Can't be now.
I'm a writer. I can invent words. Rewatchably, I'm going to give it like a 9.
Okay.
Because it's very high.
Oh, I think fair.
But quality, critically, I'm going to say with you, like 7. So I'm going to average those two and be like a 7.9, 7, like 8.
7.9 is final a really answer. Specific
yeah.
rating. Good.
I mean, I like to be specific.
That's good. Yeah, it's good.
But on IMDb, the score is 8.4 out of 2,712 votes at the time of this recording. Yeah. So a little bit higher. So yeah. Right there in between.
Can you tell me, where does that, can you see where that falls, like, compared to others in the season? Like,
I would say it's about average for season 7. So.
You should put an asterisk next to that. We have no idea if that's true. Asterisk. Put that in the show notes. It's fine.
Show notes. It's just average. That's about, you know, middle of the road for season 7. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
We're professionals. This is what happens when Cortland and I get together. Trouble. Okay. So, Cortland, now that we're kind of getting settled into season 7, this is episode 6, we've got a little bit of a feel for the tone of season 7. How do you feel like this episode fits in with the overall, you know, feeling of 7? Does it compare to 6? Do you feel like season 7 has that distinctive, cohesive feeling like 6 does, or 8?
I think
that's a lot of questions.
No, that's okay. I think that your general question is, how does this fit contextually into where we are in the show? And that is kind of how, whenever I'm doing podcast preparation, that is pretty much the lens that I look at each episode with anyway. It's just how my brain works, is the whole context picture. So I have a whole bunch of notes about that, like sprinkled throughout my little, but I actually think that on first viewing, it would appear not to at all. I think season 7, at first kind of glance, doesn't look like season 6 or season 8 in terms of like the cohesive story. But I think if we are generous and thoughtful about how we look at it, there's definitely some theme elements that run through we can talk about. I wrote a whole bunch of other episodes that I'm like, oh yeah, this and this.
So, I can't wait. Don't worry. Okay, perfect. We'll get to those then.
Okay.
Yes, that is great. Well, I mean, overall, just kind of expanding on that just a little bit. So you've got season 6, quote, quote, and I do not like this moniker, X-Files Light.
Yeah.
And then you've got season 7, and then you've got season 8.
Yeah.
So tonally, if season 6 is the light season, how do you feel about, like, is season 7 kind of like the middle ground? I mean, obviously it falls in between the light, but if season 8 is darker, much darker than season 6 comparatively.
Yeah, I think that we are definitely moving into that. Mm-hmm. I think that season 7 does actually do a lot to set up the transition to season 8. So, and I think that this episode, even though it feels a lot more like season 6 and X-Files Light, I think that the theme here is actually moving a lot closer to Requiem, to be honest. I think it's moving a lot closer into Requiem and then into season 8. I think the idea here is that we have Harold Weems, who is the luckiest man on earth. He can get anything that he wants or needs without even trying, and all of it comes with a really significant cost, either to him or the people around him. And I think that that's where we, like, that's pretty sad. That's tragic. So I think that moves a lot closer into what we see in Requiem and generally speaking in seasoning.
Okay, we are definitely going to have to talk about this.
Okay, good.
Let us know when we get to your thoughts on that. Okay. But first, let's dig in to the episode and break things down.
Let's do it.
Okay, so our teaser. We've got a poker game. And I know nothing about poker. I'm not a poker player. I have never actually really played poker before. I've tried to learn, not good at it. But I do know that Henry Weems is not a good poker player.
He's terrible.
So there's that. I know that much.
Yeah, yeah.
And this teaser is fairly innocuous as far as X-Files teasers go, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody actually dies.
No, nobody dies. Well, I think actually, so my very first note that I wrote down for the teaser is that I think that Mark Snow is doing a lot of heavy lifting for,
I feel like you're right,
this episode, like making Correct. It very clear that something is, I mean, obviously many things are off about the poker game, but that there's something X-Filey about this poker game, that there's maybe an element of like mystery and suspense a little bit.
Yeah.
Having, you know, he had, the score is really good, and I think it's doing a lot of work to keep us in the game.
Right. In the X-Files mystery game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I love Castle.
I do.
Poker and poker games play a very significant role in the Castle television show. So, you know, feel like we've got some elements of that going on. As far as the directing goes, very similar style there.
Okay.
With the, with the poker game. So
I think what I would like to know about this poker game is, how did Harold Weems know about it? Because he is there alone with a bunch of mobsters playing poker.
He got lucky, Corlin.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Of course he did. Of course he did. Do they frequently invite other people to play this poker? I don't know. I wish that we had a little more information about how he like walked into this poker game.
How did he get here? I had that question too. And also I had the question, with these mobsters just throwing people off of roofs, like, you know, that's his building. He lives in that building. What were they expecting to happen when they threw him off the roof?
It's brazen. They're pretty.
You've got a dead body splattered on the sidewalk in front of your apartment where a mobster lives. Does he really think that he's that untouchable? I guess I don't know. Probably
he did. I also think I would have liked to see the moment when the mobsters discover there is no dead body plastered in their laundry service. couldn't have gone well.
Yeah, so throwing the Weems out with the bathwater, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
After the credits, this is one of my very favorite. This is probably my favorite scene in the whole episode.
Okay.
But, like, I just love how Scully's walking around on the sidewalk. You know, and they set it in Chicago, which is great because they could film downtown LA and make it somewhat believable, even though I think one of the buildings shows up that's very famous in LA. It's like,
why? Yeah. Also, as we mentioned, this is December, and that is just not at all what Chicago looks like in December.
Not even close.
But okay, no. Sure.
Yeah, I've been in Chicago in December, and it is not not enjoyable.
No.
But you've got Mulder coming up. He calls Scully, and he's like, "Hey, Scully, what you doing?" And she's like, "I'm looking for you." And then he just comes out of the street. It's like magic.
Nice outfit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, I have to agree with Mulder. It is a nice outfit. I was thinking to myself, because I just listened to Tony's interview with Jeffrey Bell, and he sort of talked about how the X-Files at this point has money, like a lot of money. And I was like, you can tell just based on the general appearance of Mulder and Scully. She's
not getting that outfit on a G-woman salary.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No. There is some money there.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them. Look great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really fun. And that was I could see that it was a very Castle-y moment too. I could feel like that's something that would happen on Castle. But anyways.
It is cute. I think it's a moment that plays into the secret sex theories about season 7. I think we're just going to jump right into that, because I think that there's a lot of that here. But they're just, you know, they're very happy. They're very flirty.
They're just both in such good moods, which is such a change from season 6, because I feel like through especially the very beginning of season 6, Scully was so grumpy.
Yeah, I think season 6 has a lot of the tension between them. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just a lot in the story. Yeah. I mean, there's still Mulder and Scully, but there's a lot of Diana Fowley tension, and there's a mm-hmm. lot of no X-Files tension, and, you know, and all of those things are gone in season 7.
They're back on the X-Files. Diana's out of the picture.
Yeah.
We got rid of her.
So it is just much easier between them, I think, at this point. Yeah. So
I definitely believe that they've got those afterglow vibes going mm-hmm. on. Especially the way she talks to Mulder about, I think it's in one of the later scenes, and she mentions something like, we could go back to our apartment.
Mm, fly to DC by sunset. I love that line. So good.
Back in DC by sunset. Yep. We could be getting it on, you know? Like, that's what she was not saying.
Sure. Unspoken. Their vibe in this episode definitely lends to that theory, even if I don't personally subscribe to that. But I think that it's easy to see why. Sure. Okay. Maybe.
Yeah. Things could be heating up for them.
Definitely.
Exactly.
I do think we should acknowledge that they go into that laundry service, and this is when they start talking about luck. Like, this is when the idea of luck and getting lucky also, like, it kind of comes into the picture. Mulder is obviously on it. He's like, this X-File is about luck. That's his job, is to already know that somehow.
Right.
But, and I like Scully's Wile E. Coyote reference.
So do you feel like luck is something that just randomly happens to you? Or do you feel like luck is what you make of it? Or do you feel like it's kind of a combination of preparation and happenstance?
I would like to believe it's a combination of preparation and happenstance. But I think that that's not the definition. I think that luck, by definition, is something that just happens.
Right. The fates.
Yeah.
It's all up to fate.
I would like to believe that I could prepare my way into being lucky.
But if luck strikes and you're unprepared, what good is it going to be?
Right.
Unless you're Henry Weems, which we're not.
Right. No. No, we're not. But I've never been thrown off a building, so I have no idea. But
no,
I'm not going to chance it.
No, exactly. So we get to the apartment building, this lady who's like, help me.
Yeah.
Emergency. I've got water leaking and you're stronger than me. Come on.
You've got to be stronger than me, right?
You've got to be. Mm-mm. He's got to be. It's Mulder, though, so.
I know.
And she probably should have asked Scully, right?
I think Scully could have fixed it.
Probably. I think she could have. She would have at least known which way to turn it.
She would. There is so much about this plumbing scene that is absolute nonsense. It is.
Yeah. And Scully, the whole time, is just standing there with her hand over her mouth like, oh, God, Mulder, this is hilarious.
I do appreciate that Scully is very much enjoying Mulder not being able to fix mm-hmm. the plumbing. That's nice touch.
Good character moment. And we get to see baby Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, this is where we meet the young Shia LaBeouf. It took a while, actually, for me to remember that is Shia LaBeouf. I didn't remember until more like halfway through.
Right.
Our interactions with Richie. It I was like, oh, different. Yeah.
Oh, right. The hair is about the only thing.
Yeah. He does a good job, though.
He does. He's a good little actor. Right. Didn't Jeffrey Bell say good things about his abilities and his interview?
He did.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that he was really good. Yeah. And easy to work with.
Sure.
Very professional young child actor. Mm-hmm. And also, speaking of actors that are in other things, Willie Garson, who plays Henry Weems, he was also in The Walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do remember way back. Way back.
Way back in the log. I talked about that episode with Clara, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think Jeffrey Bell mentioned he wrote this part specifically for Willie Garson, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
It does.
I think he's it's so obvious. After he said that, I was like, obviously, there's only one person who could do this.
Right. I cannot imagine anyone else, no one else to play this role.
No.
He's perfect.
No. Also, my home state of Indiana gets a shout out because he is not getting sent to Muncie, Indiana to milk cows.
No. I thought about you and the cows. That made me laugh too because cows from Ranking.
Yeah. I just want to be clear that Muncie, Indiana is actually a larger city in Indiana.
Right? It's not very rural. Rural.
Most of Indiana, it's in the middle of a lot of rural space. Uh-huh. But Muncie is the home of Ball State University. So it's kind of bigger.
They find out that there's a random false eyeball hanging around.
Yep. In the laundry cart, they find it.
And Mulder, at least he doesn't lick it. Sometimes he does that with evidence.
I'm not sure. I feel like even Mulder wouldn't put an eyeball in his mouth.
Especially how squicked out he was when he puts it back in.
Yes, that's a great face that David Duchovny makes. I think the important part for me about this conversation after Mulder and Scully meet Harold Weems, mm-hmm. The thing that I wrote down mm-hmm. in my notes, that this is very in step. This conversation that they have is very in step with what the conversation they're going to have later in All Things.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Yes, because in All Things, we have Scully kind of reaching this conclusion that, like, maybe there are no wrong choices, that all the choices that she has made have led her to this point with Mulder. And they have a little bit of that conversation here because they're talking about how everything lines up to make Henry Weems lucky, that all these things are happening to make him lucky, to work out in his favor, and that it's this like carefully crafted universe of occurrences. And that's, to me, very similar to the conclusion Scully is going to reach later, that all of these things have lined up in her life to put her where she is, just like all of these things line up to put Henry Weems in a situation where he doesn't die after he falls 300 feet.
Do you feel like that kind of also ties into maybe Field Where I Die?
Yeah, maybe. I think that there's a lot of this theme of like, because I also wrote down Improbable does the same idea where there's God who is carefully crafting all of these crazy things that so that they line up perfectly, you know.
And like that begs the question of, you know, talking about like if you relate it back to Field Where I Died or Improbable, like how much of a choice do you have
right. In
how things turn out? And it's very nuanced and meta sometimes.
It is.
You know, and it's like, well, maybe it's all fate that we ended up this way. And our past lives, we're just reliving the same thing and the same people and the same experiences. Or, you know, is it luck or is it fate or is it God? You know,
yeah,
some deep stuff.
It is. And I just think, like, I think for the Goldberg variation, it's just on a very, very, like, narrow scale, right? Whereas, like, The Field Where I Died is, like, universal across lives. And All Things is about Scully's life and all the choices in her lifetime. And for Harold Weems, it's literally about each moment, like the series of teeny tiny details. You know, it's just about scale. And so I think, as they were having that conversation after they talked, you know, about how Harold Weems gets lucky, I was like, this feels really to me in step. The idea of it feels really in step with what we're going to get later from Scully later in the season.
It does. Yeah. And also I really appreciate the structure of this episode kind of in relation to that, because you have these smaller events like the mobster coming in and banging down the door and all these little sequence of events happen to get him up on the ceiling fan.
Yeah.
And that's just a small fraction of it. But then you have the overall overarching theme where, in the grand scheme of things, maybe you could argue that Henry Weems survived that plane crash just so Richie could get a liver later.
Exactly.
Or, you know.
Exactly.
So, like, and then Mulder starts to realize that toward the end,
yeah,
which is pretty cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, speaking of favorite scenes from this episode, Mulder's reenactment of what he believes happened is my favorite scene from this,
yeah,
episode. He's like pretending, ugh, to kick down the door. The sound that he made. Watcha. It's my favorite. That's my favorite
scene.
He's
having so much fun.
He really is. And I think that Scully is having fun watching him have, mm-hmm, fun.
Oh, yeah.
Although how he managed to piece it together is beyond me. Like, I don't.
Well, he's Mulder.
Sure.
He's got a photographic memory and he went to Oxford. So obviously.
So obviously that helped him figure out that the mobster flipped end over end and his shoelace caught in,
yes,
the ceiling fan.
Obviously. So clear to anybody with an Oxford degree and a,
yeah,
photographic memory.
Yeah.
But then Scully has her own profound realizations later, which I like.
Yeah.
So she Mulder puts the little pieces together, the puzzle pieces, but then Scully is the one who nails it,
I think,
and gets it. Yeah. The motivations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Waka!
Waka! It's just my favorite. It makes me laugh every time.
Can I just read you the note that I made for the scene?
Absolutely.
They're super banging. Scully is in way too good of a mood in the scene. Mm. They're super banging.
I think she is at the very least delighted to see Mulder so delighted about,
yeah,
this case that they're on.
I do really enjoy the scene where Scully and Richie get to talk together. And I really appreciate that we know she is a medical doctor. Scully is a medical doctor, and she is putting the pieces together because there's the IV thing. She knows he's got some kind of illness. She's trying to figure it out, but she never asks.
She's very,
she puts it together,
good with the kid in this, mm-hmm, in this particular episode. I never think that Scully is particularly bad with children. I think it's pretty, no, you know, I think she does.
Right.
I think that's pretty obvious, like, mm-hmm, throughout. Yeah. But I think especially in this episode, I think she's really good with Richie.
Yeah.
And very intuitive to know that this is the second time that Richie has showed up in their sort of case. And so obviously some interest in whether she's, mm-hmm, obviously trying to determine if it's interest in the case or in Harold. So, mm-hmm, I like that. She takes the time to figure that out. But I do think, right, Scully again says maybe everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, for me, that's the theme that we're going to see come up over and over again.
Right.
Throughout.
That's good, though. Also, Henry Weems and Shia LaBeouf are very adorable. Like, Shia's just Richie. He's just the cutest, right?
He's a good kid.
He is.
And he's clearly drawn the short stick there.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing good. I think this is where also Mulder starts to introduce the idea, well, really explicitly introduce the idea of cause and effect. That it's, mm-hmm, not just that things line up to make Harold lucky. That also,
right,
tends to make other people unlucky around, mm-hmm, him.
Yeah. Because you have to have balance in the universe.
Yeah.
It all has to balance out.
Right.
And Henry, like, understands that. And so he's actively trying to avoid situations in which he might make other people unlucky.
Right.
Or his luck. His luck being good might make other people,
right,
have terrible luck. And so he kind of has, it's sort of sad how he has developed this life of basically not existing.
Yeah.
Because his luck is so, would you call it toxic luck?
Perhaps? Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
It reminded me really a lot of Lost. Which I know comes after the X-Files, but you know, mm-hmm. Hurley in Lost, this is a spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched Lost. Sorry. You know, Hurley gets toxic lottery winnings, basically.
Yeah.
He has toxic luck and he is impervious to the bad things and everyone around him mm-hmm. pays the price, basically. You know, and that reminded me a lot of Henry. So I think it's that idea of like, balance, it has to balance out somehow. So if we're going to take all of the good side into Henry's luck, then all of the bad side has to go somewhere. So, which is also an important concept, I think, as we transition closer to season 8.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And do you feel like Henry, I appreciate that Henry is not this bumbling idiot that they could have potentially made him just a caricature and he could have just been like, I don't know what's happening to me, you know, but he's smart and he's at least figured out that, and Mulder brings attention to this where he says, you know, you realize that your luck affects other people negatively. And so that's why you focused on the gangsters, because essentially, and this is not a direct quote, but they deserve it anyway.
Right. Well, and I think it's so cute. I mean, we have this scene where Scully points out, like, if you're the luckiest person on earth, why wouldn't you just go play the lottery? Like, obviously, you know, it's perfectly obvious to Scully. Like, if you know you're going to win, you know you're going to get what you want, why wouldn't you just do it? Why would you bother with mobsters and poker and, you know, like, that seems really convoluted. Obviously, Henry, God, why do I keep calling him? So sorry.
It's okay.
Henry keeps, you know, Henry has his reasons. He knows why, but Mulder and Scully haven't yet reached that conclusion. And he even says to Richie, he's like, I have to go do something I've been putting off, because he knows he can go and win the lottery, but he knows there's going to be a consequence for it. And he can't predict what that is. And so, you know, he's been actively avoiding doing the thing that he knows he could do, which I think makes him a really good character. Like,
absolutely,
he's a good guy, it turns out.
Yeah And he cares about Richie so much, which makes him lovable. And you know, let's talk about the lottery scene, because it's so much fun. There's a lot of good things happening here. I appreciate that there's cows on the lottery ticket, because a couple of the things I looked up that are foibles or whatever, on, like, it's a Wisconsin state lottery ticket that he's buying in Illinois. Technically,
is it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's what
you
they
did
said.
Not
it's
notice
a Wisconsin.
That.
It's a Wisconsin lottery ticket, but I mean, Chicago and Wisconsin are right next to each other.
Maybe it's just the theme
ish.
Because he plays a scratch off, right?
Yeah. I don't. It said
that
on.
Doesn't make
it
any
said
sense.
On. I. It was on the Wikipedia X Files wiki. That it's a Wisconsin state ticket. Also, they mentioned that in Illinois and Wisconsin both, that payouts happen in a lump sum. So where he says you get the payout in 12 months, that's incorrect.
Well done.
Apparently, unless it's a multi-state lottery, which this was not.
Maybe it changed.
But I think it's hilarious that he clearly doesn't want to do this thing.
No.
He knows what's going to happen. He knows this is going to end badly. He's prepared for that mentally. You can see him in the way he's acting. He's just like, I just want to get this over with. Because he knows he's going to win.
Yeah. I really appreciate that the way he's going to mitigate the bad thing that he knows is coming is to only win exactly as much as he needs and no more.
I don't need that much. Yeah.
Right. And that, I think, is a really interesting strategy that he's going to get exactly what he needs and no more. I think that's clearly his strategy to everything that he's doing. Because he's going to quit poker as soon as he hits $100,000.
Like, nope,
no,
I got
more.
Enough and I'm going to go. And this, no, you don't get the chance to win it back.
Right.
I've got what I need and this is enough.
And of course, because this is how it works for Henry, like, his decision to quit is often the thing that kickstarts the series of events. And then it's, you know.
Well, I mean, I guess they probably didn't have, like, Google. But, you know, you would think that he would figure out ahead of time, maybe, how he's going to get paid from the lottery.
I don't know.
Where do I get, like, he's not going to have $100,000. Just take it to the register and be like, okay, give me $100,000. Right. It's not how that works. No,
the cash register doesn't have that.
No. And I love, let's talk about Maurice for a second. Love him.
Maurice, I want you to have this.
He's played by Ernie Lee Banks. Mm.
It's interesting to me that Henry just, he throws it away. He throws that to get away. What does he think is going to happen to that? Like, of course, everyone around him can see that there's, like, what does he think is going to, okay.
Poor Henry.
He tries to talk him out of it. He's like, just leave it alone. That reminded me a lot of Lost as well, where he's like, no, don't use the money. Like, don't take it because bad things are going to happen. And
I appreciate how much Scully is enjoying Maurice's statement. She's taking his statement and she's like, okay, so let me get this straight. Mm-hmm. This guy ran out and got hit by a truck, but after he called 911, he was loaded up. He said, what again?
And she just goes with it.
She's trying so hard not to laugh. She knows.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny.
She's just going to go really with it. She's
enjoying it. Yep. Okay. So, all right.
Right.
Well, do you think Maurice got the $100,000?
I kind of hope so. But that was my question was, I mean, we don't know this. Like, we don't know how far the luck and bad luck extend in this particular universe. So we don't know. Like, if he does get it, is it cursed? Is it?
I don't know.
So,
but also, if he is the owner or person who runs the establishment in which the lottery ticket is sold, aren't there rules for that?
I don't know.
I feel like maybe there's rules for that can't profit.
You can't win.
If you are the one who sells the lottery ticket in the first place.
I don't know. Well, I hope only good things happen to Maurice.
I hope so too. He deserves it, I think. He worked hard for that ticket.
Yeah, sort of. A lot happened. Happened really fast. So this is kind of where we start reaching the conclusion that, okay, we can't have good things without bad things. I think Mulder says something to that effect. Like, we can't have one. We can't have the extreme luck without the extreme bad luck. We can't have one without the other. And it reminded me very strongly of what I think is one of your favorite episodes from this season, which is Je Souhait. Because as we know, if you make your wish, it's probably not going to go the way you want.
Exactly.
It's going to come with some unexpected problems.
That's true.
Because that is how the magic works. The magic gives you what you want, but also it turns out is going to have some bad stuff attached to it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, is the same idea here. You're going to get what you want, and it's going to come with some negative consequences. You know, you're going to turn yourself invisible and get hit by a truck. You know, like, I don't know. You're going
to coming back from the dead is not exactly what you
right.
It's not all it's cracked up to be.
Exactly. So I think that is once again on theme for what we see in some of the season 7, even in the what we would consider fun and light episodes of season 7, there is this idea of balance and getting what you want, but maybe also losing a lot in the process.
Right.
Which brings me back to Requiem.
There you go.
But
nice. I see how you did that.
Nice. Thanks.
It's like a nice little circle there.
Other people are going to complete. Other much more articulate people are going to talk about Requiem later. So we're not going to get too much into it. But when I watch this, I do think Dana Scully is going to reach the conclusion that all these things are happening in her life for a reason. And then very shortly thereafter, she's going to get what she wants and also lose everything.
Poor Scully.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. And so that, to me, even Mulder is kind of going to get what he wants and lose everything, because he's going yeah. to have conclusive proof of aliens and not be able to tell anyone because he's a dude.
Well, you know, if only he had a peg leg, his life would be so much easier.
If only. He wouldn't care if there were aliens, I guess.
No. So one of the things that I noticed is I really appreciate that this episode flows very nicely, having Mulder and Scully come in and out of it. They're not really the central focus of the story.
No.
They're just kind of there, which is fine. But, I mean, it's not like other episodes. They actually are investigating. They do have some cause and effect. They are part of the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't bother me. I like Henry's story. I like mm-hmm. seeing him on screen, and I like his character. And I like the story of Richie and his plight. And I think it's a compelling story to drive the plot along.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it works in the idea that this whole episode, like everything they're doing, is part of the series of events, right, that mm-hmm. conspires to make the luck that ultimately gives Richie the sliver. So we have to see all the pieces moving. Like, we have to see all of them. We can't just see any one. We have to see all of them. And so I think that that works really well.
Yeah. It would be a very different episode if we stuck with Mulder and Scully. It would not turn out the same.
Yeah, it would not. Well, no. I mean, it would turn out the same. We just wouldn't understand it.
Right. The same way. It would not make sense. Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's cool. And, oh, yeah, the part where the bullet ricochets everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Of course, Fox Mulder gets shot, but just a little.
Of course. Just a little bit. Makes sense. Oh, man. Oh, I also mentioned Mulder just got shot, and he's super amused because he totes knows he's getting laid later.
He doesn't even feel bad about it.
Uh-uh. He's like, look at me. I just got shot, Scully. You going to take care of me tonight? Mm. You know she is. So we're at the point of the episode where they start to figure things out, and they are following the plot. And Mulder's starting to be like, hey, I think that's this. He's having his theories.
Yep. And back to the card. Back to the card game. Yep.
Bringing it around. Mm-hmm. I like that, how they set that up.
I like that whole conversation where Mulder is, he's like, you're obviously lucky. Like, you have luck. Mm-hmm. But why are you doing this? And Scully is like, well, duh, Richie.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, how do you not know that already?
Right. Okay, so one of the things I thought of that I was going to mention earlier, and we are here now. Do you think that Henry's luck started as a result of the plane crash? Or do you think he always had luck? Because his life before the plane crash was very different, as opposed to his life after the plane crash. Do you think that was what gave him his luck, or? Yeah.
I don't know. I think in my mind, it's always been this horrible thing happened to him, mm-hmm. but he got really lucky, and that he kind of got stuck on that, like that track where he mm-hmm. now is like in this plane crash. That's a really horrible thing that happened, but he got very lucky. And so now, from now on, he's just going to have this problem where he's going to get really lucky when really bad things happen. And, like, mm-hmm. it kind of just goes around and goes around and goes around like that.
Right. But also, do you think that bad things happen because of his luck? Or do you think that he's lucky because bad things happen?
I mean, chicken or the egg. We don't know.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. I don't know which came first.
Yeah. Right. Because, you know, if he had not been in that plane crash and gotten that luck, like we said earlier, maybe Richie would have never gotten what he needed.
Right.
To be healthy. So, don't know.
We don't know. That part is the mystery. Mm-hmm.
I like it, though. It's fun to think about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a fun episode.
Yeah. I also think this is another episode I was thinking about. Is yeah. way back in season one, Lauren Kite is haunted by a ghost that protects her and kills everyone around her. Or really frightens everyone around her. And I was like, remember how, like, really, I mean, technically she's fine, but she's horrified because of all the bad things that keep happening around her. And I think that's true. Mr. Weems has that kind of feeling, that kind of vibe.
Right. Okay. I think we need to talk about the gangsters at this point.
Okay.
Because I noticed when I was reading up on this episode and listening to other people chat about it, we're going to talk about it in the mailbag some too. But overall consensus seems to be that for people who love this episode, even the gangsters are too ridiculous for them.
Yeah.
How do we feel about the gangsters, Cortland?
They are a bit cartoony. They are. Not a lot of depth there.
Over the top. Street pizza.
Not a phrase that I use in my daily life.
And I appreciate that. What does Henry call them? Something Goomba jerks?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
Goomba jerks.
They are a bit of a caricature, I think. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I don't know. I think that the X-Files does use caricatures, kind of.
Yeah.
Especially in, like, this kind of, like, Monster of the Week episode. And even, like, you know, you mentioned the Amazing Mellini earlier.
Right.
I mean, there's there's a lot of that feeling.
But do you feel like this episode would work as well if the gangsters were more straight up gangsters?
I think that we're meant to see the gangsters as cogs in the and in the wheel, and that they just don't matter as much as they think they do, or that maybe even that we think they do. So I think if we made them too serious, it would take our attention away from what we're supposed to be focusing on, which is the luck and, you know, the convergence of events. So I think that would be my explanation for how we have arrived at such caricatures.
I agree. And I like that you use the word cogs, because they are essentially just these pieces in this thing. And if they were very serious gangsters, then having them caught up in a fan by a shoelace and flip upside down would not be as fun. And the bullet doing this crazy ricochet thing would not fit, you know, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I think they had to be that way in order to make the rest of the episode work. So I don't mind it.
To fit the tone. Yeah.
Me. Mm-hmm. And of course, Catrona is the perfect match for Richie.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in the hospital playing this card game with Henry, Scully pulls the last card and she says, "Hell, Mulder, I just beat him." So Scully is maybe luckier than the luckiest man on Earth.
She's immortal. Scully's immortal. So yes.
Okay, but this is what happens to, I'm just saying, if these are the things that happen to people around Henry when he's lucky, is Scully the reason for all of the things happening, like, around her? Like, she gets really lucky. I'm just saying, she gets really lucky. Or even, like, we could take it back even further, right? Like, Scully does not get shot in her apartment. Her sister does. Like,
it's true.
Is Scully luckier? I don't know.
That shoulder shot when she shoots Mulder, excellent marksmanship. Could have been luck. We don't know. But I feel like Scully is really good.
I think Scully's probably really good.
I think she's got good aim. She knows what's up. And she's a doctor. She knows where all the important body parts are. She knows where to aim.
True.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think, I mean, it's just a little moment in the, you know, in the episode. And it's meant to make us think, oh, no, Henry's not lucky anymore somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That his luck has, like, worn off. But
yeah,
I always think, oh, but maybe this is another little Scully tidbit of her her story about being lucky, but also having such bad things happen.
That's true. And I mean, if she were really that lucky, would she have gotten abducted? I don't know.
Or is that part of the series?
Part of the whole scheme of the thing.
I don't know. We don't know.
Is luck what we make it, or does it just happen to us? Don't know.
Maybe there are no wrong choices. Just saying. Anyway.
This is what we're here for, to raise these questions.
These are my deep thoughts about seasons. These are my deep thoughts about seasons.
See, everybody thinks that this is just a fun, light episode, but it's really deep.
Can't
There's
be.
A lot going on.
If you think about it, I don't know.
A lot going on in this episode.
Or maybe it's just me.
No. It's a happy ending, though.
It is.
Which I appreciate. Not a lot of the X-Files are happy endings.
Unless you're a mobster. And then it's...
Unless you're Joey Catone or whatever.
Catrona.
Catrona. See?
Yeah. Unless you're
it's
him.
Fine. Unless you're that guy.
I also think it's really interesting that Mulder has a lot of faith in this luck system. Because he says he's going to stop Henry, and you know, he stops him on his way out and is like, maybe we can't see the forest for the trees. This is all going to work out fine in the end. And like, that's not usually what I associate Mulder.
He is not usually the optimist.
Well, it's just a very faith-based kind of statement for Fox Mulder to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really interesting.
I do have a quote from Frank Spotnitz about this episode. It's from the official guide to the X-Files, and it says, this episode had a lot of humorous moments that we were afraid of doing because as many people who like the funny ones hate the funny ones. But the idea seemed so strong to us that we decided to push it to later in the season because we wanted to scare the hell out of everybody during the first few episodes. So I think it's interesting that he recognized, like, hey, this is a funny episode. And we want to make sure that we scare people first. So we're going to push this back to December here.
Okay.
Because I think I looked up on the X-Files wiki and it said that this was actually the second production number two.
Mm. And that makes sense. We were kind of talking about this before we started. The haircut.
Yeah.
The haircut is a problem in this episode. Because they filmed it earlier than when it aired, and so Scully's haircut is out of order. There's like a weird scene. I think they're in the car kind of early on, and Scully is wearing a wig to disguise the fact that she's already like had to do reshoots or something, and like there's a haircut that happens at the end of Amor Fati, but then it goes back to not being cut. It's very
yeah. Scully's hair is an X-File in itself.
It is. This is another example of me wishing they had a show Bible. It's okay, though. Whatever.
It's all right. It all worked out.
I do appreciate that Frank Spotnitz to go back to the quote, and not to do with the haircut. I mean, he does acknowledge that this is not necessarily the scary kind of X-File that people are expecting. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
More.
I think it's good. Yeah. So any final thoughts about the episode, or should we jump into the mailbag?
My final thought is that two final thoughts. First final thought, I really love the scene with the phone book where Scully makes a wonderful face at Mulder while he is randomly picking information out of the phone book. She cannot believe that this is what it has come to, but somehow goes with it anyway. I really like the phone book scene.
Yes.
And also, phone books. Is that a thing still?
I know. Remember
anyway,
those?
I do. Anyway, phone books. And then my final thought is to say that I think that another really strong point in this episode's favor is the, like, set design and the amount of editing that must have gone into filming and having all of these sequences like a bullet ricocheting around the room. And even the sequence where the mobster like flips up and gets caught in the ceiling, all of these things had to require a lot of really careful planning and work. And I think they did a great job.
Absolutely. Shout out to the set directors and the art directors who came up with the little Goldberg contraptions.
Yes, even just the Goldberg contraction. Yeah, contraptions themselves.
Those are fun. They had to make those and come up with the ideas for them.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. They did a great job.
It makes me feel overwhelmed just thinking about how I would go about doing that, both on a small scale, like for the contraption, and then also on a large scale, like the set. That's
absolutely
very impressive, I think.
I think that would be a fun challenge, though.
Oh, sure. I'm sure they had a great time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, with that being said, I think this is a fun episode overall, and really enjoy getting to watch it and talk about it with you, Cortland. Yep. Let's go jump into the mailbag and see what our listeners had to say over on the XCast basement. Okay, so our first comment comes from Kurt North. Kurt says, I really like this one. Willie Garson is perfectly cast. It's always enjoyable seeing him in other shows post this. I love how the episode itself is the variation. It is playful and doesn't take itself too seriously, and I would say is better for it. It's season 6 light in nature, and I'm fine with that. Is it top tier? No. But it is memorable and watchable. Absolutely. So, yes, agree.
Yeah, very well. I think that's very well said. And I think that his comment about not taking itself too seriously is how we wound up with mobsters. Like this.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just not taking it that seriously, which is fine. I think it works. And I hadn't ever considered the episode itself is the variation. I like that idea.
I do too.
I like that idea.
Yeah. I like that it's self-aware, that it knows what it is and leans into that. You know,
it's a little bit Darren Morgan-y in that sense. I mean obviously nothing like a Darren Morgan episode, but I think that the idea of it is
right,
you know,
the tone and the knowing as, what you are and
right, yeah, it is distinct,
right? Exactly. Kathy Irwin Glinsky says, I adore this episode. It's perfectly cast, although the mafia types are a little over the top. I love that Scully figures out how Weems's actions are tied to Richie. It's a nice, empathetic moment for Scully. Mostly, though, I love how fun the episode is and how often we see Mulder and Scully smile.
Yeah. They are very smiley in this episode.
So smiley.
And I do love it when we just get it very rarely. So I always love it when we do see it.
I do love to see Mulder and Scully smile. They have been through so much. Yep. They deserve to smile sometimes.
Yep.
It's true. Okay, Andrew Levitt says, it has charm, it has its funny moments, but ultimately I find it a disappointing episode with little to no substance. It's about as far as from what The X-Files is about as the show went. Definitely one of the bottom episodes for me.
I think it's fair to not like the variation in tone because it is different. Disagree about the substance.
I feel like we just proved that in this whole episode. I think we did pretty well to establish that it does have a lot of substance.
I did my best. But
you did a great job, Cortland.
I can appreciate that it is a very different tone.
Yes.
And that's, you know, something for everyone.
Right. Chandru says, the scene where the neighbor asks Mulder to fix the leaky pipe, only for the pipe to burst and spray Mulder, is the X-Files at its least ambitious. It's The X-Files as a sitcom, and the episode never tries to rise above that, which is a problem for me. While I love me some charm and emotions, see almost any Darren Morgan episode, this episode is just too sugary sweet. Probably my least favorite episode that is not downright bad. It's a better episode than something like Teso Dos Bichos or Alpha, but I much prefer watching those episodes over the Goldberg variation. Too saccharine, he says. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Again, something for everyone. I think
exactly.
Something for everyone. It's funny. It's funny that he would rather watch Alpha or Teso Dos. That is, for me, that would be difficult. I would completely disagree. I would much rather watch the Gold River Variation. But again, you know,
rewatchability, man. If it's between Teis Otos Bijos and Goldberg Variation, hands down
for me.
No question. I'm taking the Goldberg Variation to the island.
Sure.
That's where it's headed.
Ooh, well, I don't know about that. Okay.
If it's between those two.
Sure. No, if it's between those two, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Tony Black says, a very sweet tale, nicely told. It feels very low-key, with the supernatural aspects more in the cosmic realm than anything tangible. But it feels in step with season 6 in its early half. Mark Snow also provides some terrific twinkly music, too. Not top tier, even for season 7. But you'd have to be hard of heart not to at least smile a little bit. That's right, Tony.
Agreed.
We like our smiles.
And agreed definitely about Mark Snow. I think, again, I think I said this at the beginning, but
yes,
Mark Snow did a lot of heavy lifting
bears
for the atmosphere. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To bring the X-Files atmosphere into this episode in whatever variation.
Variation. I see what you did there. Hey. Christopher says, not the only episode this season about getting lucky, if you catch my drift.
Ayo.
Kind of a goofy episode, but an enjoyable one to watch, and thematically interesting in terms of everything happens for a reason. Although this show's temperamental relationship with determinism is a little annoying.
Hmm. Obviously, I very much agree about the everything happens for a reason theme. I think that it is very much on point for the theme and where we are with it between season 6 and season 8.
Yes. And finally, we're going to wrap up with Carl, who says, Maurice, I want you to have this. I love that moment. I like the Goldberg Variation. Kurt said it quite well, I thought. A solid 3 stars from me. I'm guessing that's 3 out of 5.
I don't know, right? Yeah. I hope it's not 3 out of 10. I don't know. Let's say it's 5.
Let's say it's 3 out of 5. Thank you all for your comments. And Cortland, where can we find you online?
You can find me in the X-Files basement or the X-Cast basement sometimes, and also on Twitter and Instagram at CWB, which is C-E-E, the word double, the letter U, B-E-E. It's my initials.
Excellent. Excellent. And you can find the X-Cast on Twitter at the X_cast. And our Facebook group, the X-Files Basement, the X-Cast Podcast Fan Group, and on Instagram at the X-Cast Pod. And you can find me, Sarah Blair, on Twitter at Sarah L. Blair, and on Instagram at author.sarah.blair. So don't forget to check out our Patreon, where we have loads of fun stuff, like episode commentaries and interviews with the cast and crew, including the writer of this very episode, Jeffrey Bell. So go check that out and see about joining in. It's a lot of fun being an X-Cast patron. So thank you so much, Cortland. We had a fun time, I think.
Thank you. I always enjoy it.
It's always fun talking X-Files. My friends. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for joining us this time. And until next week, always remember, trust no one.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Cerebral Jukebox.
She was like, okay, do you want to play spin the bottle with me? Now, as a 13-year-old, I was probably one of the most nervous wrecks on the face of the planet. I was like, well, I can't just like play. I'm not playing with like everyone says. I was like, oh no, like, can we play in the bottom? Like, yeah, but that would just be, oh Jesus, let me just kiss her. So that's what happened.
Life's milestones.
With me at this time is Alexa. Alexa, hello.
Hi there.
So, my first ever electronic guest here on Life's Milestones. Alexa, how old are you?
I'm as old as my tongue, and a little older than my teeth. Or I would be if I had any. Sorry, I'm being silly. what do you expect from a five-year-old? Thanks for being interested in me. Here's another fun thing. Try asking me to sing you a silly song.
Pretty Fly, a 90s nostalgia podcast.
In the modern day, the harmonica, it's a sophisticated instrument of class and distinction.
Yeah, it's right up there with the harpist chord and, you know, the cathedral organ.
Did you just say the harpist chord?
Yes.
You mean the harpsichord?
I do mean the harpsichord. Thank you for that.
Like, hang on a minute. Did this guy just say harpist chord?
I did.
Oh, who's goodness. Sophisticated now?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast was created by Tony Black and is produced and hosted by Carl Sweeney, Sarah Blair and Kurt North.
You can find the podcast on Twitter at @X_cast, on Facebook by typing in the X-Cast, and in our group, X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group, and on Instagram at the X-Cast Pod.
Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member on Patreon. Our patrons get early access to episodes, behind-the-scenes chats with our hosts and a thriving community of X-Files, and other premium interviews and specials. To find out more and subscribe, you can go to patreon.com/thexcast. That's patreon.com/thexcast.
We are also part of the We Made This podcast network, full of popular culture shows, including our Millennium series, The Time Is Now. You can find all of our shows at our website, wemadethispod.com, or via Twitter at wemadethispod.
Thanks for listening and keep watching the skies.